I love you, Pumpkin.
I love you, honey bunny.
Everybody be cool, this is a robbery!
Any of you fucking pricks move! And I'll execute every motherfucking last one of you!
Are you ready? I say, are you ready? To go on a ride to a masterpiece by a genius, Mr. Tarantino, Quentin Tarantino. A true masterpiece by this man. Pulp Fiction is the name of one of the best feature films ever made in Hollywood. If you ain't a fan yet, let me take you on this ride, and I'll promise you, you'll become one. By the way, this is Sylvia Dos Santos. Come on this ride with me. Now just know, you'll enjoy it, just like I will. Lying in bed, Fabienne makes the argument that having a flat belly sexy, to which Butch responds, "You think men would find that attractive?" Fabienne responds with this. By the way, Fabienne is Maria de Medeiros, our very own Portuguese actress, in a scene with Bruce Willis for the movie Pulp Fiction. And she says, with a French accent, "It's unfortunate that what we find pleasing to the touch and pleasing to the eye is seldom the same." More quotes ahead. Cue the music.
To find her gone, and a note says only after dark. We'll be right back. dark and lonely heart wants her and waits for
Still, Maria de Medeiros, Portuguese actress that portrayed Fabienne on screen with Bruce Willis interpreting Butch. And she says, "Whose motorcycle is this?" And he says, Butch says, "It's a chopper, baby." Fabienne goes, "Whose chopper is this?" Butch goes, "It's Zed's." "Who's Zed?" "Zed's dad, baby. Zed's dad." One of hilarious scenes, if you like dark comedy, of course. That's right, Butch. Zed is very dead. It's high time that you and your girlfriend get out of town. Quickly. Well, another quote I love from the scene, a line from the movie Pulp Fiction. Jules, interpreted by none other than Samuel L. Jackson. He goes with accent, "Read the Bible, Brad." "Yes." "Well, there's this passage I've got memorized that sort of fits this occasion. Ezekiel 25:17. The path of the righteous man is beset on all sides by iniquities, by the selfish and the tyranny of the evil man. Blessed is he who, in the name of charity and goodwill, shepherds the weak through the valley of darkness. For he is truly his brother's keeper and the finder of lost children. And I will strike down upon thee with great vengeance and furious anger those who attempt to poison and destroy my brothers. And you will know my name is the Lord when I lay my vengeance upon thee." Oh, well, definitely one of the Samuel L. Jackson's finest moments on film. While on the other side, Mia Wallace, interpreted by Uma Thurman, she goes, "Don't you hate that?" Vincent, portrayed by John Travolta, one of the best ever, he goes, "What?" And she says, uncomfortable silences. Why do we feel it's necessary to yak about bullshit in order to be comfortable? Vincent goes, I don't know. That's a good question, though. Mia Wallace says, that's when you know you've found somebody special. When you can just shut the fuck up for a minute and comfortably enjoy the silence. Wow, what a scene. Beautifully acted scene by Travolta and Uma Thurman as Mia. Winfield says, say what again? Say what again? I dare you. I double dare you, motherfucker. Say what one more goddamn time? Samuel Jackson is the man. Speak English. English, motherfucker. Do you speak it? Don't ask questions. Don't get scary responses. In one scene, Jules Winfield, aka Samuel L. Jackson,
won't you?
So Jules Winfield offers a simple solution for avoiding answers you won't enjoy hearing. Just don't ask the questions. Samuel L. Jackson, aka Jules Winfield, goes, "If my answers frighten you, then you should cease asking scary questions." Across the table from Vincent, John Travolta, at a meal, Jules stops Vince's interrogation short. At hearing this, Vince holds up a finger, starts as if to say something retaliatory, then proceeds to leave the table to use the restroom.
Jackrabbit Slim's Twist Contest.
So Neil Wallace says, "Now I want to dance, I want to win, I want that trophy. So dance good." That's all it takes to compel John Travolta to say, "All right, get up on the stage." Vincent Vega and Neil Wallace, ladies and gentlemen.
It was a teenage wedding and the old folks wished them well. You could see that Pierre did truly love the mademoiselle. And now the young monsieur and madame have rung the chapel bell. C'est la vie, said the old folks, it goes to show you never can tell. They furnished off an apartment with a two-room robot safe. The coolerator was crammed with TV dinners and ginger ale. But when Pierre found work, the little money coming worked out well. C'est la vie, said the old folks, it goes to show you never can tell. They had a hi-fi phone, oh boy, did they let it blast. 700 little records, all rock, rhythm, and jazz. But when the sun went down, the rapid tempo of the music fell. C'est la vie, said the old folks, it goes to show you never can tell. They bought a souped-up chitney, was a cherry red 53. Drove it down to Orleans to celebrate the anniversary. It was there where Pierre was wedded to the lovely mademoiselle. C'est la vie, said the old folks, goes to show you never can tell. Truly love the mademoiselle. And now the young monsieur and madame have rung the chapel bell. C'est la vie, say the old folks, it goes to show you never can tell.
So during Mia and Vince's night out, Mia drops another truth on us viewers. And she says, she heads up to the bathroom to do more than use it. And when she returns, she finds her plate of food has arrived. So Uma Thurman, a.k.a. Mia Wallis, says to Vincent Vega, a.k.a. John Travolta, she goes, "Don't you just love it when you come back from the bathroom and find your food waiting for you?" He says, "Yes, Mia. Yes, we do."
Girl, you'll be a woman soon. I love you so much, can't count all the ways I died for you, girl, and all they can say is, he's not your kind. You'll never get tired of putting it down, and I never know when I come around what I'm gonna find. Don't let them break up your mind.
Despite Tarantino's love for Uma Thurman, she wasn't his first pick for the movie role of Mia Wallis. Did you know that? Other possible Mias? Isabella Rossellini, Julia Louis-Dreyfus from Seinfeld, Meg Ryan, Aubrey Woodard, Halle Berry, Daryl Hannah, Rosanna Arquette, Joan Cusack, amazing actress, and Michelle Pfeiffer, many others. Tarantino's original favorite was supposedly Pfeiffer. Michelle Pfeiffer was for the role of Mia Wallis, not Uma Thurman. But you know what? The destiny made his way to Uma Thurman, and we're glad for that. Tarantino loves vintage board games, and it shows. The filmmaker is an avid board game collector, which is why the film features Operation and the Game of Life. Tarantino convinced John Travolta, to come on board with an all-day Welcome Back, Cotto Grease and Saturday Night Fever. board game marathon. And by the way, Vincent's preferred reading material is very real. Vince loves reading Pulp Fiction books during his Hayham private time, including Peter O'Donnell's Modesty Blaze, a real Pulp Fiction novel based on O'Donnell's 60s comic strip. Tarantino has long expressed interest in bringing that tale to the big screen, including giving his official license to the 2003 film Quentin Tarantino Presents My Name is Modesty. The original poster can fetch you several hundred dollars. The first poster had Uma Thurman, smoking from a box of Lucky Strike cigarettes. But Miramax hadn't licensed usage rights from Lucky Strikes, who threatened to sue. And rather than fight it, Miramax had the posters returned. Those that survived can now command big money. Jules may have been written for Samuel Jackson, but he almost lost the part. The movie. Tarantino very much had Jackson in mind for the role of Jules. Thank God for that. But when he auditioned Paul Calderon, he was so struck by the performance that he very nearly hired him. Jackson, desperate to get his role back, flew to Los Angeles and auditioned for Tarantino again. I have a famous relative, well, famous in the Tarantino universe. Anyway, it's widely believed that Christopher Walken's, that's the right thing to say, Captain Coons is a descendant of Django Unchained, one of Tarantino's movies. Character Crazy Craig Coons, who is only mentioned by name in a wanted poster. And did you know Robert Rodriguez directed parts of the film? When Tarantino is on screen as Jimmy, someone else had to be behind the camera, and that someone was Robert Rodriguez. The pair later teamed up for a number of other projects, including one of my favorite, Dusk Till Dawn and Grindhouse.
Now you are real.
And did you know that John Travolta didn't really inject Thurman in that scene with cocaine? The infamous scene in which Mia Wallace, aka Uma Thurman, is stabbed with a very necessary adrenaline shot was stressful enough, so Tarantino took off some of the pressure. The needle was inserted for real, and then Travolta pulled it out. The scene was reversed in post-production, so it looks as if Vincent Vega, aka John Travolta, really is plunging that syringe into her. Movie magic, ladies and gentlemen. This is truly movie magic. That's why we love John Travolta and Uma Thurman and the genius Quentin Tarantino. They made us. They made that look real, but it isn't real. It's just a movie, ladies and gentlemen. It's just a movie. One of the best ones, of course, Pulp Fiction.
In all this comfort, I can't take the strength. If we played even, I'd be your queen, but someone was cheating, and it wasn't me.
Butch is the character played by Bruce Willis. And did you know it was supposed to be a lot younger? Tarantino wrote the part as a young boxer with Matt Dillon specifically in mind for the role. But when the actor took too much time considering the part, it was tweaked slightly to accommodate none other than Bruce Willis. And we thank Tarantino for that, who was a little ticked that he wasn't asked to play Vincent.
If you don't, the Bowman, you can easily lose. I had a nun and a monster. And no one can help me share the pain that you caused me. Oh, a woman got a hat. She's got to know that she's needed around. When you kiss her, you gotta make her feel it. Every time.
might find a tear trace. Maybe the girl might never say a mumbling word. But you gotta make sure that her voice is heard. Oh, I had a love, a true love, and I lost it. I'm suffering all this pain that that love cost me. All a woman got to have it, you gotta give it to her. She wants when she wants it. Where she wants it. And how she wants it. Oh, yeah. Every doggone time she feels she needs it. What I'm trying to say, what you're trying to say, well, I've only got to have it.
The mysterious anonymous Tig on the car, Top Gear's TV show that I just love it. The anonymous Tig was inspired by the mysterious anonymous Pulp Fiction Gimp. The Gimp was even the original name for the Stig, until they couldn't find a racing driver willing to use that name. Just one of the curiosities of Pulp Fiction and Top Gear. Tarantino has a long tradition of connecting characters in his various films, and I love him for that. I want to say that. Basically, the filmmaker is working with a number of sprawling family trees. And it's always a treat to see how characters intersect between movies, which would have made Madsen's casting of Vince come with a surprising twist. It might have made him Mr. Blonde's, Madsen's character from Reservoir Dogs, another great movie by Tarantino, twin, as it's long been known that Vince and Blonde are brothers. The angels stuck beneath your head. The regulator swinging pendulum. Dream with the feathers of angels stuck beneath your head. The regulator swinging pendulum. As Vincent Vega was written originally for Michael Madsen, Tarantino specifically, wrote a number of roles in the film for chosen actors, including Samuel L. Jackson, Harvey Keitel, Tim Roth from the TV show Lie to Me, and Amanda Plummer. But nothing compared to his dedication to having Michael Madsen play Vince. Madsen, who knew of Tarantino's plans and said he wanted to do the part, dropped out 2 weeks before the script was finished to star in Wyatt Earp. Well, what a curiosity.
You should have chained up all the doors and switched up all the locks. And how many times have I prayed? The angels.
Even though the film Pulp Fiction, of course, made over $100 million. It took a long time to get there. Even though Tarantino's film ended up being a tremendous hit, no one knew about that, especially considering that slim budget. It took some time to get there. The film was wow, this is alive. Like Pulp Fiction, I bet. So as I was saying, it ended up being a tremendous hit, especially considering that slim budget. It took some time to get there. The film was in release for 178 days before it finally pulled in $100 million domestic dollars. A little comparison, it took Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2 only 2 days, so that's a comparison, I think. The film was the third biggest R-rated earner of 1994. The film lost out on the title of True Lies, $146.2 million, and Speed with Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock at $121.2 million. The film's earnings were strong enough to place it in the overall top 10 for the year, though 1994 was dominated by none other than Tom Hanks' Forrest Gump, which made $329.6 million that year. But yeah, run, Forrest, run. But I'm talking about Pulp Fiction, so stick around for more curiosities. Cue the music.
Take off your silver spurs and help me pass the time, and I will give to you summer wine. Oh, summer wine. Strawberries, cherries, and an angel's kiss in spring. My summer wine is really made from all these things.
I walked in town on silver spurs, the jingle too. A song that I had only sang to just a few. She saw my silver spurs and said, let's pass some time, and I will give to you summer wine. Oh, summer wine.
Strawberries, cherries, and an angel's kiss in spring. My summer wine is really made from all these things. Take off your silver spurs and help me pass the time, and I will give to you summer wine. Oh, summer.
My eyes grew heavy and my lips, they could not speak. I tried to get up, but I couldn't find my feet. She reassured me with an unfamiliar line, and then she gave to me more summer wine. Oh, summer wine.
Strawberries, cherries, and an angel's kiss in spring. My summer wine is really made from all these things. Take off your silver spurs and help me pass the time, and I will give to you summer wine. Summer.
When I woke up, the sun was shining in my eyes. My silver spurs were gone, my head fell twice its size. She took my silver spurs, a dollar and a dime, and left me craving for more summer wine. Summer wine.
Strawberries, cherries, and an angel's kiss in spring. My summer wine is really made from all these things. Take off those silver.
And the movie cost only $8.5 million to make. Can you believe that? When there's a will. $5 million went to the actors' salaries. It made that all black in its first week at the U.S. box office. The film pulled in $9.3 million the first weekend of release. Did you know that Vincent Vega's 1964 Chevelle Malibu was stolen after the shoot? After shooting the movie, the car that John Travolta drove, the 1964 Chevelle Malibu, was really stolen for real. It was stolen. John Travolta's character in the film had a sweet ride, which in real life belonged to Tarantino. And it was such a hot rod that it was stolen soon after the film's release. It wasn't found for nearly two decades. Yes, 20 years, wow. When two cops happened on a pair of kids stripping an older car, after running the vehicle identification number, they found it, share the number with a car in Oakland, which turned out to be the stolen car by Tarantino's, the Tarantino's car in the movie.
Want some bacon?
No, man, I don't eat pork.
Are you Jewish?
No, I ain't Jewish. I just don't dig on swine, that's all.
Why not?
Pigs are filthy animals. I don't eat filthy animals.
Yeah, but bacon tastes good. Pork chops taste good.
Hey, sewer rat may taste like pumpkin pie, but I'd never know because I wouldn't eat the filthy motherfuckers. Pigs sleep and root and shit. That's a filthy animal. I ain't eating nothing that ain't got sense enough to disregard its own feces.
How about a dog? Dog eats his own feces.
I don't eat dog either.
Yeah, but do you consider a dog to be a filthy animal?
I wouldn't go so far as to call a dog filthy, but they're definitely dirty. But dogs got personality. Personality goes a long way.
So by that rationale, if a pig had a better personality, he'd cease to be a filthy animal. Is that true?
Well, we have to be talking about one charming motherfucking pig. I mean, he had to be 10 times more charming than that Arnold on Green Acres, you know what I'm saying?
Well, the film Pulp Fiction contains 265 F words. You know what I mean? Fucking fuck. Okay. 265 F words. Even that hefty number is in Tarantino's highest. 1992's Reservoir Dogs used it 269 times. Still, the film was the big F-word winner of 1994, as no other film released that year even came close to that amount of profanity.
On my face, losing control, yeah, I'm all over the place. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you. When you started off with nothing, and you found it, you're a sorry mess.
Can watch the film chronologically, kind of. The narrative structure of the film plays out of sequence, but it's easy enough to break it down into seven distinct sections: a prologue, an epilogue, two preludes, and three large segments that can then be reordered into a chronological narrative. Hint: the first prelude to the gold watch section plays first. If that doesn't help, here's an infographic. But for now, cue the music.
Sit down, get comfortable. Yeah. How long have we known each other? About 10 months? Yeah, I think it's, yeah. Mm-hmm. You and John are real tight, aren't you? Yeah. Oh, is that an engagement ring? Oh. Congratulations. Oh, he slipped it on your finger last night, huh? He's the luckiest man in the world, you know? He should be real proud to have someone like you. Oh, yeah, what I wanted to talk to you about is... Well, there's something that's been bugging me for about 5 months. And I've been carrying it around with me. And it's getting heavier and heavier every day. And, you know, it's almost to the boiling point. I have to get it off my chest. Yeah. I'm not trying to be fresh or anything because I know you're John's girl, but I just have to tell you this. You see, I have a great deal of respect for you. I'm not being, you know, not going to let feel on you. But, dear, you see, I'm going to take you back to my childhood in a way. See, we had quite a big family. We weren't, you know, very rich. Sometimes we lived from day to day. But one thing we did do, we went to church every Sunday. You know, Mama took us to church. And I was in the choir, too. Yeah, I sang a little bit then. Sunday school. And she taught us the golden rule, Ten Commandments. And she said, son, do unto others as you would have them to do unto you. She said, don't steal, don't rob. You know, all the things that good parents try to instill in their children. Well, you know, I did, a few little things, like shoot hooky. I guess every kid is shoot hooky, you know, once. And she said, stay out of trouble. You know, when I was a teenager, I didn't, you know, break in or burglarize or rob anybody, you know. I tried to work for what I got, you know. Tried to be honest. You know, didn't commit no crimes or nothing. But, you know, I had to wait until I reached manhood to commit a crime. According to the court of love, if there is such a court. But, you know, sometimes you are forced into things like this. You see, sometimes Cupid can shoot his arrow so fast you can't get out of the way. You know, and you can fall. And the more you, something just like being in quicksand too, the more you wiggle, the deeper you sink. I don't take up too much of your time. You see, I'm not very good with words, and I had to tell you all of that, you know, to really say what I got to say. See, there's a lot of talk going around town. And I'm on the make for John's girl. You know, Ike is on the make for John's girl. But, you know, I don't mean to do anybody wrong because I don't want nobody to bother anything that belongs to me. But, you see, I've never seen me. But, you see, I've never seen anybody like you. I've never known anybody like you. And there's some things you just can't help. You know, at night I toss and turn. I try to keep it out of my mind, but you see, I find myself thinking about you. I just can't help it. And right now, I stand accused of loving you too much. And I hope it's not a crime. Cause if it is, I'm guilty. Loving you, oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
that I never had, or to testify, 'cause if I do, everyone is gonna, they're gonna cry. Sweet girl like you, I know you belong to another. Why I may not stand the ghost of a chance, I'll stand on top of Mount Everest to tell the world that I love you. Oh yes I will, because I just can't, I can't help myself. I'm a victim of circumstance, and just one,
ooh, one touch of your hand. Are you a fan, just like I am, of movie soundtracks, cinema music? You know, those soundtracks that keep up with your life, with my life, with everyone's life.
Everybody's guilty. I'm guilty of loving.
I just love songs in the movies.
I'm loving you.
Yeah, I'm guilty. Then again, I'm guilty of loving cinema so much.
But what can I do?
I stand accused of being a, you know, a huge fan of cinema all around.
But when myself, she belongs to another in many rounds. I didn't ask to fall in love with you.
Did you know, Honey Bunny, that she calls Vince Honey Bunny, was named after an actual rabbit? A bunny? Oh yeah. Honey Bunny belonged to Linda Chen, who typed up Tarantino's handwritten script for Pulp Fiction. Did you listen well? I hope you did. She handwritten the script for Pulp Fiction. That's amazing. In lieu of payment, she asked Tarantino to watch her rabbit when she went on location to work. Tarantino wouldn't do it. Of course, he's Tarantino. What else? And when the rabbit later died by his fault, by Tarantino's fault, he named, poor rabbit, oh my god, poor bunny, he named Amanda Plummer's character after Chan's pet, Honey Bunny. Another curiosity. The film was released in South Korea, Japan, and even Slovakia before it arrived in America. Well, I didn't know that. Tarantino's film first played the Cannes Film Festival in May 1994. It was shown at other festivals around the world, from Munich to Locarno, before hitting American shores on September 23rd, 1994. At the New York Film Festival, the film was released in South Korea, Japan, and Slovakia before it officially opened in the US on October 14th, 1994. The feature film rolled out across Asia and Europe, throughout 1994 and 1995. Well, in addition to teaching Americans what a quarter pounder with cheese is called in Europe, the film reunited the career of John Travolta, who received a Best Actor Oscar nomination for his work, and even showed audiences a different side of Bruce Willis. Here's a conversation with Royal Cheese for you. Okay.
So tell me again about the hash bar.
Okay, what you want to know?
Hash is legal, man, right?
Yeah, it's legal, but it ain't 100% legal. I mean, you just can't walk into a restaurant, roll a joint, and start puffing away. I mean, they want you to smoke in your home or certain designated places.
And those are hash bars.
Yeah, it breaks down like this, okay? It's legal to buy it. It's legal to own it. And if you're the proprietor of a hash bar, it's legal to sell it. It's legal to carry it, but that doesn't matter, because get a load of this, all right? If you get stopped by a cop in Amsterdam, it's illegal for them to search you. I mean, that's a right that cops in Amsterdam don't have.
Oh, man, I'm going. That's all it is to it. I'm fucking going.
No, baby, you dig it the most. But you know what the funniest thing about Europe is?
What?
It's the little differences. I mean, they got the same shit over there that they got here, but it's just there. It's a little different.
Example.
All right, well, you can walk into a movie theater in Amsterdam and buy a beer. And I don't mean just like a little paper cup. I'm talking about a glass of beer. And in Paris, you can buy a beer in McDonald's. And you know what they call a quarter pounder with cheese in Paris?
They don't call it a quarter pounder with cheese?
Oh, man, they got the metric system. They wouldn't know what the fuck a quarter pounder is.
And what do they call it?
They call it Royale with cheese.
Royale with cheese.
That's right.
What do they call a Big Mac?
Well, Big Mac's a Big Mac, but they call it Le Big Mac.
Le Big Mac. What do they call a Whopper?
I don't know. I didn't go on a Burger King. You know what they put on French fries in Holland instead of ketchup?
What?
Mayonnaise.
God.
I seen them do it, man. They fucking drown them in that shit.
Yeah.
More about Pulp Fiction in just a while. First, cue the music. Quentin Jerome Tarantino, born March 27, 1963, is an American filmmaker and actor. He's known for his extended scenes of dialogue, ensemble cast, and a wide variety of other film soundtracks, primarily like this one, like this song we're listening to now. soundtracks primarily containing songs and score pieces from the 60s to the 80s, alternative story, and features of neo-noir film, non-linear storylines, and violence. Well, that's there's a lot of violence in these movies. Crime, drama, action, spaghetti western, some may say, alternate history, and black comedy. But these songs he chooses for his movies are on my playlist all the time. So enjoy this one if you like soundtrack movies. Movie soundtracks, that's better. Pulp Fiction is a 1994 American independent neo-noir crime film written and directed by Quentin Tarantino, who conceived it with Roger Avery, starring John Travolta, Samuel Jackson, Uma Thurman, Harvey Keitel, Tim Roth, Amanda Plummer, Maria de Medeiros, our own very own Portuguese actress, Ving Rhames, Eric Schultz, Rosanna Arquette, Christopher Walken, and Bruce Willis, and many other. Cinematography, Andrés Sekula. Edited by Sally Menke. And distributed by, of course, Miramax Films. It tells several stories of criminal Los Angeles. The title refers to the pulp magazines and hard-boiled crime novels popular during the mid 20th century, known for their graphic violence and punchy dialogue. Tarantino wrote Pulp Fiction in 1992 and 1993, incorporating scenes that Avery originally wrote for True Romance. In 1993, its plot occurs out of chronological order, like I said before. The film is also self-referential from its opening moments, beginning with a title card that gives two dictionary definitions of pulp. Considerable screen time is devoted to monologues and casual conversations, which I love it. I love those endless conversations in the movie, with eclectic dialogue, revealing each character's perspectives on several subjects. And let's face it, Tarantino chose a very good selection of actors to interpret these dialogues, these extended and eclectic dialogues for his movie Pulp Fiction. This film features an ironic combination of humor and strong violence. TriStar Pictures reportedly turned down the script as too demented. Go figure. That sounded too demented for TriStar Pictures. Well, you lost, TriStar Pictures. You could have won this movie, this amazing movie. So Miramax co-chairman Harvey Weinstein, well, that's a character, was enthralled, however, and the film became the first that Miramax fully financed. And we thank Miramax for that. Of course. More Pulp Fiction fun facts in just a while. Well, did you know that the script where Samuel Jackson says that quote I earlier quoted, that he says, "And you will know I am the Lord when I lay my vengeance upon you." The actual Bible verse says, "I will carry out great vengeance on them and punish them in my wrath. Then they will know that I am the Lord when I take vengeance on them." So that's the actual Bible verse. But, you know, scripture isn't the only thing, right? Director Quentin Tarantino took creative liberties with for the film that premiered at Cannes Film Festival at May 21st, 1994, and in honor of Pulp Fiction's anniversary. He Here are some fun facts. Vincent Vega's John Travolta character trips to the bathroom. Potty breaks are bad news in this film. Whenever John Travolta's character Vincent Vega takes a powder, tragedy occurs. During his three bathroom breaks, Mia Wallace, played by Uma Thurman, overdoses. The restaurant where he and Jules are dining is held up. And Bruce Willis, Butch Coolidge, a.k.a. Butch Coolidge, gets the drop on him. And fed up, the F word, as I said before, is used 265 times in a movie. Go ahead and count it. And The Notebook, fueled by the money he had made from his film Reservoir Dogs and the deal he had for Pulp Fiction, Tarantino took off the mask to Amsterdam to write The Ladder. According to Vanity Fair, he bought school notebooks and declared about one of them, like a modern day Hemingway, "This is the notebook in which I am going to write Pulp Fiction." Well, I would love to have that notebook and put it like in a museum, if you don't mind. He ended up filling several notebooks, not just one. Yeah, it's not surprising, of course. The Honda Tarantino got a lot of use out of the Honda Civic that Butch drives in the film. It's the same car Pam Grier drives in the title role of Jackie Brown, if you remember that, and appears in a parking lot scene in Kill Bill Volume 2, starring Uma Thurman. You know that movie from Tarantino also, if you are a Tarantino fan, as I am. Speaking of cars, 1964, Chevelle Malibu. Convertible Vincent Vega drove actually belonged to Tarantino, as I said earlier, that I really wanted you to know that Yahoo reported a few years back that one Bill Jimenez of San Leandro, California, had spent more than $40,000 to restore the classic ride, which he had for a dozen years before police informed him it was actually the famous vehicle from Pulp Fiction, and Tarantino was the original owner. For the record, Jimenez had never seen the film. What? He never seen the film and did not know who Tarantino was at the time. So this is really funny. More fun facts in just a while. Some plans for tonight, and then I stop. and Jackson, Samuel Jackson, was convincing enough, producer Richard Gladstein told Vanity Fair that when Jackson did his second audition for his role, he showed up with a burger and fries on his hands, key props in one of the film's pivotal scenes. You remember that scene, of course. The actor proceeded to consume the meal so menacingly, the Gladstein said, "I thought that this guy was going to shoot a gun right through my head at that time." And another fact from the movie, one of Tarantino's friends, a recovering heroin addict, advised John Travolta on how best to portray a man riding that horse. He told the actor that getting drunk on tequila while relaxing in a hot bath would closely approximate a heroin high without him actually having to do the drug. Well, okay, tequila and a relaxing hot bath. Will you try that? I don't know. You tell me after. The bat wallet scene. The director didn't have to look far for one of the film's most memorable props. Jules' wallet. Samuel Jackson, Jules, you know. Jules' wallet, which had "bat motherfucker" written on the front of it, actually belonged to none other than Tarantino himself. So, the wolf, the scene. No one else could have played the man who specialized in messy cleanups. Tarantino reportedly wrote the character of Winston, the wolf, specifically for Harvey Keitel. Keitel helped to get it made. It was the revered actor's commitment to taking on the role, which helped raise funding for Pulp Fiction, but also secured Tarantino's role as director, given that Keitel backed him for it. The same pie, Fabian's line, "Any time of day is a good time for pie," sounds familiar. It should. The character of Alabama says the same thing in another Tarantino film, True Romance. And the scene, what's in the case? There have been so many theories about what was in the mysterious briefcase that Jules and Vinny had to protect. Well, I'm curious about it also. With everything from gold to Marcella's soul being suggested, crazy suggestions, by the way, but Tarantino has said in interviews that it's whatever fans choose it to be, though he has also had fun with moviegoers by promising a reveal, but he didn't reveal it. Keeping it in the family. And the meaning of the Band-Aid. Marcello sports a Band-Aid on the back of his neck for a reason. It covers up a scar actor Ving Rhames had. And you know that dance trophy, the dance scene? The audience is led to believe that Vincent and Mia Wallace, Uma Thurman, won the dance contest at the Jackrabbit Slim's restaurant. That scene where they are dancing, locking eyes, you know, I love it. And I even had done it in my own home already. So I have fun with the movie. But late in the film, when Butch, John Travolta, is Bruce Willis. I'm getting mixed up. Is returning to get his watch. There's a radio bulletin at the trophy having been stolen. And the Gimp actually had a wife Saturday Night Live, Alan Julius Sweeney had a bit role in Pulp Fiction as a junkyard owner, and The Wolf's Breakfast date, Raquel. In real life, she had been married to Stephen Hibbert, who played the Gimp in the film, who later, as I told you before, made the idea for the Top Gear, you know, the car TV show that I love, and inspired the Stig, the Stig character, the anonymous Stig. So there's a lot of fun facts for you about Pulp Fiction. More to come later. But a good song from a movie.
There's a place where lovers go to cry their troubles away, and they call it Lonesome Town, where the broken heart stays. You can buy a dream or two to last you all through the years, and the only price you pay is a heart full of tears. Going down to Lonesome Town, where the broken heart stays. Going down to Lonesome Town to cry my troubles away. In the town of broken dreams, the streets are filled with regret. Maybe down in Lonesome Town I can learn to forget. Maybe down in Lonesome Town I can learn to forget.
Good songs, good songs from movies, and this one in particular, Pulp Fiction. One of my favorite soundtracks of all times. A throwback serial. Tarantino apparently has a fondness for a particular brand of discontinued cereal. I love eating cereals. I don't eat them anymore, but I did for several years and I love it. Just like Jerry Seinfeld, you know, on the TV show. Lance, played by Eric Stoltz, is shown eating Fruit Brute in the movie The Cereal. The cereal with its signature werewolf on the box was part of the General Mills Monster Collection, which also included Count Chocula, Boo Berry, Frankenberry, and Yummy Mummy. There is also a box of Fruit Brute in Mr. Oranges, played by Tim Roth, apartment in Tarantino's Reservoir Dogs. It's nothing is by chance with Quentin Tarantino. Everything has a something related to, you know. And you know the scene at the beginning of the now infamous overdose scene where Mia Wallace, aka Uma Thurman, is wearing Vincent's John Travolta's coat. Moments later, she goes to light a cigarette and is no longer wearing it. The coat, you know. And the coat magically appears back on her once the cigarette is lit. Mysterious things in this movie. And did you know Robert Redford, I love Robert Redford. Who doesn't love Robert Redford, right? And could have starred in the movie. Ronnie Yeskel, the film's casting director, told FlavorWire that unlike on Reservoir Dogs, Hollywood agencies were pitching Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman, another amazing actor, and Bruce Willis, just the biggest names in the business that you could imagine. And we're sitting here in these rooms with all these suits, and they all look alike, and we're like kids in a candy store, Yeskel said. We couldn't believe they were pitching these people to us. This is so cool. That's why I love Pulp Fiction and Tarantino movies. I hope you liked this podcast for today about one of Quentin Tarantino's masterpiece. Enjoy the last song of the soundtrack. Bye bye. See you next time.
Cause I wanna get it on till I die. In my vault, cause I wanna get it on till I die. Get it on till I die. Get it on till I die. Yup, y'all remember me.
I like the way you die.
In my vault, cause I wanna get it on till I die. In my vault, cause I wanna get it on till I die. Get it on till I die. Get it on till I die. Yup, y'all remember me. Only wish to breed, I explode into a million seeds. Y'all remember me, legendary, live eternally. Bury me in pieces, cause they fear reincarnation, niggas screaming peace, cause they fear when my squad face them. Take them to places, take the face, then erase them and break them. All the motherfuckers out of waiting, the quicken and base. Blast me, but never ask me to live a lie. Am I wrong, cause I wanna get it on till I die. Now even if you blind, you can still see my prophecy. My destiny to overthrow those on top of me. Bitch made niggas in that bullshit you going through. Outlaws, bustle, we untouchable. Cause I wanna get it on till I die. In my vault, cause I wanna get it on till I die. Get it on till I die. Get it on till I die. Y'all remember me.
I like the way you die.
In my vault, cause I wanna get it on till I die. In my vault, cause I wanna get it on till I die. Get it on till I die. Get it on till I die. Y'all remember me.
Expect me, nigga, like you expect Jesus to come back. Expect me, nigga. I'm coming.